This iconic David Hockney painting has just broken auction records, going for the highest sum ever paid for a work by a living artist. Portrait of an Artist, Pool with Two Figures, was sold at Christie's in New York on Thursday after a telephone bidding war between two determined would-be buyers. The war started at $70 million, surpassed the estimated $80 million, and went on up to $90.3 million.
For Owen Mulaudzi, life on his small South African farm has recently got easier, and that's thanks, he says, to the award-winning Kula app, touted by its founders as an African solution to African problems. The aim of the app is to connect small-scale farmers, such as Mulaudzi, with supermarkets who can order fresh organic vegetables straight from the ground and have them delivered to their door.
Getting ready to go shopping for your Thanksgiving dinner? Be prepared for some big deals in the meat aisle, specifically in the pork section. Thanks to President Trump's tariffs and subsequent trade war, U.S. exports to China and Mexico are way down. In retaliation, China has slapped a 62% tax on U.S. pork, and Mexico still has a 20% penalty on U.S. imports like pork, even though the two sides have the makings of a new trade agreement. With exports to those two countries shut out, U.S. pork producers have no other choice and to slash prices in order to drive up consumption in the domestic market.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's November the 19th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business week getting underway. That is, if you are working this week. I know a lot of folks have taken the whole week off for Thanksgiving, but we'll be here at least for part of the week until Wednesday with broadcasts every day. We've put together a good one for you today. Coming up in just a few seconds, David Rabbi will be here. He's the CEO and one of the co-founders of Tovala, the steam oven and fresh meal delivery company based here in Chicago. Tovala has a big announcement with the new oven out, and David is going to be here to talk to us a little bit about that this morning. He'll be here in our first segment. In our second segment, at about 5:40 this morning, Dr. Jonathan Day will be here. He's an associate professor of hospitality and tourism management over at Purdue University, Tourism and Recreation in a Warmer Indiana. This report that was issued last week over in Indiana, suggesting that climate change will impact recreation and tourism. And if it's going to affect Indiana, it's probably going to affect other states as well. So that'll be in our second segment this morning at 5:40. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street a little bit later this morning, with Dow futures off about 0.25% this morning, down about 40 points. Same story on the S&P this morning, down about 4 points, but still about 0.25%. The NASDAQ futures off about a fraction. Around the globe this morning, major markets in Europe are generally higher, but not by a whole lot. The FTSE up just about a third. The DAX up just a fraction. The CAC up just a fraction as well. And in Asia, markets are generally higher, with markets in Japan about 0.5% higher. The Nikkei is going to end the day up about 140 points. Hang Seng up about 188, nearly three quarters. The Shanghai up nearly a full percent this morning. Oil is trading at $56.73 a barrel. Some stories before we begin this morning. Apple CEO Tim Cook says it's just a matter of time before more regulations are imposed on social media and tech companies to protect personal information. In an interview with Axios, Cook says while he's a believer in the free market, people have to admit when the free market isn't working. Cook is a self-promoter of self-regulation, but after recent scandals involving Facebook, he says he sees congressional action as inevitable. This week, people are going to hit the stores for Black Friday. Retailers are getting ready. The holiday shopping season traditionally begins the Friday after Thanksgiving, but now the big chains are competing for gift shopping dollars by offering deals early. Amazon's Black Friday deals are already available, as are Target and GameStop. Holiday savings begin today at Kohl's and Wednesday at Walmart, Best Buy, and Office Depot, and begin their Black Friday savings on Thanksgiving. That's Best Buy and Office Depot. And some developing news this morning out of Tokyo. Japanese broadcaster NHK says the chairman of Nissan, Carlos Ghosn, has been arrested on suspicion of financial misconduct. We'll be following that story throughout the morning as well. Let's begin front and center this morning. It's our CEO Spotlight. And the company, Chicago-based Tovala, the steam oven and fresh meal delivery company, has just launched its second-generation oven. Co-founder and CEO David Rabbi is here to show it off and give us a company update. David, good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on all your success, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just to paint the picture for the listening audience, David is here. He's sitting in front of the new generation of the Tovala oven. Tell us about it and tell us what's going on at your company.
Yeah, so our new Tovala oven came out on Tuesday, and it is significantly lighter, significantly smaller. We've really redesigned it from the ground up based off of customer feedback. So we listened to what all of our customers were saying, things they would have preferred to be improved in Gen 1, and used that to build this one from the ground up and kind of answer to all those questions.
I noticed as soon as I came in and saw it, it's significantly smaller. How much smaller is it? How much less does it weigh? And what were people telling you about what they wanted?
Yeah, the first one was pretty big. It was hard to carry. It was heavy. It took up a lot of counter space. And so one of the critical things with this Gen 2 was, how do we make it smaller? How do we make it lighter, but not sacrifice the cooking space? Mm. So the cooking chamber is the same size. The actual oven is 12 pounds lighter and 15 to 20% smaller in its overall footprint.
What is it that, besides the size of it, that users, let's say the Gen 1, would notice if they used this one right off the bat?
So it looks totally different. We really wanted to create a more high-end premium oven type appearance, and this one, I think, does a really good job of that. It also has some more functionality on the front of the oven. So whereas the first one relied almost wholly on the mobile app to cook, now if you want to do basic things on the front of the oven, you can. If you want to bake, if you want to steam, if you want to broil, you're a couple buttons away from doing it. Whereas the first one, you'd have to take out your phone just to do some very simple functions.
Yeah, and I was reading one of the reviews of it, and didn't think of this the last time we were in talking about it, but let's say you have a house sitter over who's there and doesn't have the app. Anybody now who's in your place can use this.
That's right, that's right. But cooking a Tovala meal is still as simple as it's ever been. All you have to do to cook one of our meals is you scan the QR code, the oven downloads the recipe from the cloud, and then cooks it automatically. So it's super convenient still.
And let's go back and remind our listeners, if they can't remember the last time you were in and we had our conversation about this, but did you start as an oven company, or did you start as a meal company, or was it always a hybrid company?
We've always started as both. We really started with the consumer problem, and it's, how do you deliver a super high-quality, convenient meal Tuesday night at 7:30. Mm. And the only solution we could think of for that was controlling everything from sourcing the ingredients, working directly with our purveyors, all the way to exactly how they're cooked, so that you can get the same meal in your home wherever you live as we do in our test kitchen. And so it's been really challenging building a food business and a hardware business simultaneously. But now we've got thousands of customers. People love the product because the food is amazing, and it's really just a scan away.
Yeah, the favorite thing I like about it is that it's different from, let's say, a meal kit company. There's so much preparation that goes into some of that other stuff.
Yeah.
It just seems that was the turnoff for me for that. But for this, it as you have right in front of you, it's the box and maybe a couple of things that you put into a meal to make it ready to go into the oven.
That's right. Every meal is prep time of a minute or less, but you're still getting fresh ingredients. Your proteins are arriving raw, like in this box we have right here, totally raw chicken breast that we've marinated. So it's not frozen. It's not like, you know, filled with artificial ingredients. Everything is super clean, but it's just hyper convenient.
So I know we had talked about this oven. Do we want to get this thing going finish our interview?
Let's do it. We've got a garlic lime chicken breast with elote style sweet corn and an ancho lime aioli here.
That sounds perfect for breakfast. You have that little bit of coffee with that, and first thing this morning, that's going to be wonderful. So you have, let's talk people through it as you go. You have two small, not really small, but there are two, what is that, aluminum?
Aluminum tray. In one tray that I just opened, we've got a hormone antibiotic-free chicken breast that we've marinated ourselves. All I'm going to do is put that in the oven. And then in the other tray, we've got a corn and sweet onion mix. I'm going to sprinkle some Cojita cheese on top of that.
Right, and these little the cheese comes in a little container, a little plastic container. What else do you have there that you're going to...
I've got a handful of garnishes that will go on after the dish. So that's it.
And that's it. The door's closed.
Sprinkle the cheese on top. I push the scan button. Hold the UPC code under the oven. It just downloaded the recipe. And then I push start. And that's it.
Hmm.
And every dish uses a unique combination of steam, convection heat, and broiling. And on the front of the oven, it's telling you what it's doing. So right now, it's steaming and working its way to 450 degrees.
When you said it downloaded what it needed, the information it needed, is it also connected to Wi-Fi? Or
it
how?
Is.
Okay.
It is connected to Wi-Fi. The reason why we do that is that every week our menu changes. So our chefs are constantly coming up with new dishes. And every dish has its own unique way of cooking. So a salmon dish might cook in 13 minutes with a unique combination of temperature and cooking methods. So our chefs need a way to change those recipes on the fly. And as a result, they store everything in the cloud, and every week there's new recipes that are downloaded to this appliance.
Let's talk about growth at your company, things that have happened since the year that we've talked to you. Obviously, you have the new Gen 2 out, but what else has changed at Tavala?
Yeah, I'd say from a product standpoint, the other major thing we did over the last year is upgrade the mobile app to help people cook their own food even better. When we first launched the product a year and a half ago, we were really, really focused just on our meals, and there were a few recipes. Now on the app, there's 60, 70, 80 recipes that we're updating on a weekly basis so that, for example, you could cook soft-boiled eggs in this thing by pushing one button on your phone. There's a soft-boiled egg button. You literally take the egg, put it in the oven in its shell, push the soft-boiled button, steams it. 10 minutes later, it comes out perfect every time. And that was based on feedback we heard from customers that, hey, I want to cook more of my own food in here too. I love your meals, but this is taking up valuable counter space. I want to cook. And because the product is connected, we were able to add all these amazing recipes to the phone, and now they're all one touch away.
I know the answer to this question, but I want to ask it in case people are just tuning in and just being introduced to you. But how is this different from a microwave oven?
So it's a steam oven. And what that means is think of it like a normal high-end convection oven that can also steam, meaning that your food still comes out, you know, it comes out extra juicy, extra moist, but without coming out mushy because it steams for a little bit. So your chicken will come out really juicy, but we can still hit it with a super high heat broil to get a nice char, caramelization, things like that. It doesn't reheat water the way a microwave would because it's not a microwave, but reheating leftovers is amazing in here, and it's because of the steam. So we've got a lot of customers that are tossing their microwaves and putting this in its place.
Who is the customer base? If you had to pull a demographic, like the average demographic, who would that be?
Yeah, the challenge is we have customers across such a wide range of demographics. We've got 26-year-old single young professionals. We've got young families. We've got folks in their 60s. We've got folks in their 80s. The real uniting characteristic is that dinner time during the week is a burden for our customers. They want to eat really well. They don't want to compromise, but they're for whatever reason, they're busy, they're tired, they're lazy. They don't want to cook on Tuesday night, Wednesday night because they're tired.
Right.
And they're still looking for a solution. A lot of these people tried meal kits. They tried the Blue Aprons, the Plateds of the world. And like you alluded to, those take 30, 45 minutes to prep. Like, that's exhausting.
It is.
You can do that three nights a week. Frozen food is not going to taste as good. Takeout is expensive. Like, every option out there requires compromise. And I think more and more people are starting to understand that our true value prop as a company is super high quality food, but incredibly convenient. And there's really no compromise there.
Convenience in the step two, like let's say I do want to cook something on my own. In a lot of the cases, it will download the shopping list to your phone.
Right.
Which makes it even more easy to make your meals.
Right, right. And it is a really good cooking tool. For the nights you really do want to cook and you have time, with the app, you can kind of rely on this to get its job done for whatever you're cooking. So let's say it's broccoli. I know I put my broccoli in there. I know exactly how long it's going to take. I don't have to massage it. I don't have to nurse it. I can worry about cooking everything else in my kitchen at the same time.
Let's talk a little bit about the price point. How is the price point changed with the new generation?
So the new oven is $349, so it's slightly more expensive than the first gen, which was $299. But if you commit to 100 meals over the course of a year, the cost of the oven comes down $100. So it's only $249 in that case.
And the meals are still about, what, $12
The meals
each?
Are $12. Shipping is always free. You can order as few as 3 meals a week. And they're, you know, if you don't sign up for the commitment, you don't have to order meals if you don't want. You could order them once and never again.
You talked about the meal kit. I've started trying a couple of these. Done with the meal kits.
Yeah.
Takes too much time
right,
in the evening.
Right.
And so next is Tavala.
Okay.
So I'm gonna try Tavala, and I'll give you, you know, next year when you're in, I'll let you know how it goes.
I love it.
But that you're absolutely right. I want to have a meal in less than 10 minutes.
Yep.
Because maybe it's, you know, I just got home. I want to have to go to bed early to get up tomorrow morning. That's a pretty cool audience that you're getting through. But also, I want to know that my meal is portioned. If I'm trying to lose weight, trying to become healthy, this is perfect for that.
That's right. We've actually had a lot of customers lose weight. It's kind of a byproduct of the product itself. It's not the intention, but it's all clean ingredients. They're pretty filling because it's, you know, a lot of protein, a lot of whole grains, a lot of vegetables, and it's portion controlled. So you eat the meal and that's it. And you're right. People end up losing weight.
Right. What have been the challenges over the last year or so?
Ooh, there's a lot of challenges with building a product as complex as ours. I'd say one of them is maintaining food quality. So for us, food quality is the single most important thing. Like if our food quality slips, we know we're going to lose customers. And so we are hypersensitive to making sure we're very careful with the food we produce, the food we ship out. And as we grow really fast, that becomes hard. And so we've had to put a lot of emphasis on quality control in our kitchen, making sure we've got our chefs there at all times to make sure that the food quality doesn't slip from where we were a year and a half ago to where we are now and where we think we'll be in a year.
And along those lines, was second generation always in the plan? Do you have a plan mapped out for the next year, next 2 years, next 5 years?
It was. With the first generation, we knew we had to accomplish a few very basic things. Most importantly, we had to prove that people liked the product and liked our meals. And we knew we were compromising on certain things like design, aesthetic, size, you know, some functionality. And we also knew there was a lot of things we didn't know. Like once we released this thing out into the wild, we knew we were going to get all this feedback that we weren't expecting. And we were comfortable with that. And so Gen 2, we knew that was the product that would take all of that feedback. It would take all the things we had wanted to do but didn't have time, didn't have money, and put it into this one. And this is really the product we always wanted to build.
When will Gen 2 be available for purchase? Is it
available now.
Okay.
It is available now. You can buy it. You'll get it well before the holidays.
Nice. I want to talk to you about some of the other things going on in Chicago, if we can, while we're still cooking. And by the way, I can start to smell something really delicious here.
Yeah, it's the like aroma. You're cooking it yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And quiet, too. I don't even hear that it's going, although we have a microphone next to it. Can we hear that there? It's generally quiet, but that microphone's pretty close to it. What do you see as the fallout from the Amazon HQ2 decision? As a CEO and founder, are you happy that this didn't happen, or does this present a new opportunity for us going forward?
I was a little torn on Amazon coming here, just thinking about our company and how it would affect us. It was clear to me that it would attract a lot more talent to Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're doing is super unique. And so I kind of thought we'd be able to take employees from Amazon over time that got tired of working for a big company and wanted to work for a fast moving, you know, really interesting consumer startup. And so in that sense, I thought it would be good. The flip side is also true. I think Amazon was going to start to take employees from different startups in town because they can pay more. They've got more benefits, things like that. So I was torn. I think an interesting question is what's going to happen with all of the money that was set aside for Amazon? And is that going to go back into the Chicago ecosystem? Is that going to help build? You know, there's a ton of really exciting, fast growing startups here that I think with more capital, more attention, like we could build an Amazon in Chicago ourselves.
Yeah. Well, I think the final price was $2.2 billion is what Illinois and Chicago offered. How would that money being put back into the local startup scene with innovation and other things, infrastructure, those sorts of things, help a company like yours?
Yeah, I mean, I think the goal with Amazon was we're going to help them come here, provide all this money, and as a result, we're going to build infrastructure, we're going to create jobs, we're going to do all these things that are going to benefit Chicago. I think you can do that with companies that are already here. Like, we've created 60, 70 jobs in the last year, year and a half with our kitchen and our team and all of that. And I think with more funding, that would only grow.
What is next for Tavala? Or is it something beyond meals and ovens, or is that always going to be your focus?
I think for the short to medium term, it's going to be meals and ovens, but continuing to improve those product offerings, particularly on the food side, and starting to offer different dietary options, starting to offer different delivery days. Like, we know there's a pretty clear roadmap for things that we want to do that our customers are asking for that we're just ticking off the list. And I think that will only continue over time.
Tell us something that we probably don't know or you haven't told us yet about Tavala that might be a surprise or a funny little tidbit or an interesting little tidbit?
Oh, that's a great question.
Have I stumped you?
That's a great
you. As we smell some more.
Kind of stumped me, but an interesting fact that I like to share with a lot of folks is our software team is actually the largest team that we have. And I don't think people realize the amount of work that has to go into support the infrastructure from a software standpoint and deliver a great experience on the app, on the website. And it's the nature of building a connected product, right? Like if your oven in your home now, your refrigerator, you bought it and it hasn't changed. It's only gotten worse. People that bought our product a year and a half ago, it's gotten better.
Yeah.
And it's an appliance, right? It's a total change in mindset of how things can improve over time that used to be just, you know, steady state.
Sounds like it's done.
It's done.
That's the warning that it's done, huh? That's a comforting sound, nice little sound. It's not like the wah, wah, wah. Oh, look at that. Done to perfection, right? Very nice. I had mentioned earlier the portion control being one of these. What does the box look say there? Does it have calories and does it have all the different things?
It's got calories, protein, carbs, you know, all the different categories you want.
Right.
And then all the ingredients clearly listed. All the allergens are listed on there as well. And then pretty basic instructions.
While it was cooking, I noticed how less steam it put out on it.
Right. Okay. Yeah, significantly less steam coming out. We've just gotten much smarter about our venting system and the amount of steam that we're putting in and also how it's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And that can just, you know, make you more comfortable if you're putting it under your cabinets. The steam really isn't an issue.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And then every meal comes with garnishes to put on after to just kind of complement your meal. So this one's got these corn nuts, some hot sriracha, and then this garlic lime aioli that we make all of our sauces from scratch. So
I know that we're going to plate it, or at least we're going to try to plate it, probably with some paper plates. But you don't really even have to do that, do you?
You don't.
You can eat right out of the...
Really, we really solve everything from sourcing to cleanup. Like, if you want to eat these things out of the trays, you can eat them out of the trays with plastic fork and knife, nothing to clean up, and fully recyclable.
Yeah. Who is your competition? Do you even want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is it's other convenient dinner solutions more so than other appliances. So things like Grubhub, things like, you know, fast cooking meals. For some people, it's the mac and cheese they'll put together really quickly, you know, Tuesday night at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
That's really what people are replacing when it comes to our product.
We've brought out our best silverware for you today. It's the Fiesta Tupperware. No, I think it's the Fiesta Bounty paper plates. Sure. We'll Bennett Wakenight, our producer, is here running the controls and already drooling and salivating. Smells the again, back to the aroma. The aroma is such that I don't remember a microwave meal ever smelling as good. Which one of these is your favorite, David?
We make this lemon pistachio crusted salmon that's incredible. It's this pistachio mixed up with lemon zest and whole wheat flour and garlic and onion, and then you put that crust, you put like a mustard spread on top of the salmon, and then you put that crust on top of the mustard spread, and it turns kind of crispy on top, and then it comes with a side of vegetables and brown rice, and then like this sunflower seed pesto on the side. It's incredible. And it's like 450 calories. You feel amazing about it, but incredibly delicious and unique.
When you have conversations with your chefs about where to go next in terms of what kind of entrees to create, how do those conversations go?
They really are the lead on that. Like, I do very little. It's really like they've worked all over the world. So our head chef worked at Noma in Copenhagen. Mm-hmm. He worked at Alinea here. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them worked at Sepia, at Modo, at all these awesome restaurants. And like when you look at the menu, there's classic American comfort food. We've got barbecue chicken and mac and cheese. And then there's stuff from Vietnam. There's stuff from the Middle East. There's stuff from all over the world. So they're super creative. I'll taste test for them, you know, but they're the experts. I let them do their job.
That was some high-level name dropping there of some of those restaurants. Those are some of the big ones.
Yes, they've worked at some amazing restaurants across the world.
Well, David, I'm going to try a little bite here before we say goodbye, just so we can tell people what it tastes like. Mm. Delicious.
Awesome.
Thanks again for coming in.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Well, it's always good seeing you. Again, congratulations on all the success. Give our best to everybody at Tavala.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
David Ravi is the CEO of Tavala, the Chicago-based steam oven and fresh meal delivery company. We're going to continue our conversation after the bell with David and tell you how the food turned out as well. And we'll do that in the podcast of the opening bell a little bit later on this morning on WGNradio.com. You can find more about Tavala at Tavala.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of the opening bell. A new report says Indiana's tourism and recreation industry will have to adjust as climate change makes the state warmer and wetter in the coming decades. The report by Purdue University's Climate Change Resource Center is the center's latest analysis of how climate change will impact Indiana. Joining us this morning to talk more about this, Dr. Jonathan Day, an associate professor in Purdue's School of Hospitality and Tourism Management. Dr. Day, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Yeah, good morning. Lovely to be with you.
Lovely to talk to you as well. The report is a little bit frightening, but it's a little dose of realism as well, or reality, I suppose. Give us the headline findings of your report.
Well, I think the headline findings are that the tourism industry, like many small businesses, needs to be aware of what's happening with climate change and be adaptive to it. I think the takeout from the report is that as climate changes, many small businesses need to, you know, be dusting off their disaster plans and making sure that they're ready for any changes that may happen, because we know that you know, it's good to plan ahead, and some of the challenges, particularly for small businesses, are you know, bouncing back from difficult climate times. And so, yeah, this is just good business sense to be prepared for what's coming.
You talk about small businesses. Give us a sense of what you mean there. I mean, for example, I guess the winter season could be shortened by as much as 25 days. That would affect businesses, small businesses that cater to that recreation.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the tourism industry is made up of primarily small businesses. You've got, you know, retail businesses that are catering particularly to visitors. You've got attractions and tour operators, the people who make our experiences when we're traveling real and exciting and fun. Most of those are small businesses, and so they need to adapt as the climate changes, as we move into the century. Now, the good news is that the tourism industry is already very adaptive. You know, some of the changes that we're talking about are not huge. They're putting more shade out in the middle of summer. They're preparing for changes in the flow of our visitors. The shoulder season is going to start earlier and finish later. That means we have to be staffed up earlier in the year and have staff later in the year as well. So these are the sorts of things to modify. There's nothing doom and gloom in this report, but what it is a wake-up call to say, hey, these changes are coming. In fact, you may have already noticed them. Be aware of them and be ready to change as you need to.
Jonathan, what would be some of the other industries that would be impacted? I know I mentioned the winter season, so like winter sports, but what other kinds of tourism and recreation industries are we talking about?
You know, other parts of tourism, you know, we're talking about not only winter sports, but summer. By the end of the century, so this is, you know, down the track a little bit, but by the end of the century, the scientists at the Climate Change Center are predicting that Indiana is going to be much warmer. It's going to be more like Georgia, for instance, than it is today. And so, you know, we know that Georgia has a great summer and people do, do fun things during their summer down there, but it's different to what we do currently here in Indiana, and so we need to be able to adapt and change to that. So, you know, it's not only that that the winters get a little bit warmer, but the summers get a little bit hotter as well as we go into the get into the 2050s and 2080s.
Is this a situation where, and I know you're putting a positive spin on this, but is it a situation where some, like for instance, for hunting, some sorts of types of hunting may have to change as animals migrate north or move north or move to a colder climate? Those animals that like that, is that the kind of thing we're talking about?
We're going to see subtle changes in lots of things, and a lot of it is going to have small impacts. And what I mean by that, you know, we know by the end of the century that some of our forests are going to look a little bit different. We'll still be able to walk through, you know, a beautiful location like Brown County, but some of the trees there are going to be different. We already know on Lake Michigan that, you know, from conversations with people who take folks out on fishing expeditions, that some of the fish have changed. And so we're still going on fishing expeditions. We're just adapting to that. That's going to have impacts on other things. Climate change is going to have impacts on other things, from the migration of birds to the you know, fish in the lakes, to the you know, when fall season happens. All of those things are going to change. Now, no one's saying that they're going to go away completely, but they are going to adapt and change. And so we, as the tourism industry, need to be aware of that and adapt with it.
Is it, I know we're talking about Indiana here, but it's not really far afield to consider this for Illinois as well. The two states are very similar, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that makes predicting climate change impacts for tourism really challenging is that it's not just the change that's going to happen here in the state. You know, we know that, you know, Chicago, which is such an important market for Indiana tourism, that, you know, in Chicago it's going to get a lot hotter as the century progresses. And so how people respond to that and where they want to escape to get away to more to get away from the heat, particularly in the city, is going to be an interesting sort of problem. Now, I can't predict that. No one can. But we as an industry need to have our eyes wide open to be prepared for it.
So what kind of steps would somebody in the tourism and hospitality and recreation industry be taking now, given this report, to prepare for that ultimate future?
Yeah, sure. You know, the thing that keeps me up at night is you know, one of the predictions is that we're going to have more rain, particularly at the beginning of the year, and that's going to lead to more flooding. And in the middle of the year, we're going to have sort of more heat waves and extended periods of heat. And there is some evidence, and it's not conclusive, but there's some evidence that there could be more storms as we get into the century. So all of those things, floods and, you know, extended droughts and heat waves and storms, those are the sorts of things that can impact a small business in a moment, right? We can adapt as things change slowly, but if you get hit by a flood, particularly if you're a small business in tourism, quite often it's hard to rebound from that. And so what I think the takeout from this is that small businesses should be preparing, you know, building their resilience, being prepared for, you know, should something happen, how am I going to continue, you know, what is my business continuity plan, how can I keep things going? Now, I've got to say, that's a good business strategy anyway, to understand your risks and, you know, not to worry about your disaster plan, but to have it there ready, you know, in the event that you need it. And so, you know, this is just a good business practice, but it's one that I think this report sort of highlights it's the importance of.
Dr. Day, we appreciate you being with us this morning. We're going to link out to the study, and so folks can get more information on that, and we would like to have you back to talk more about this at some point.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for letting me share a little bit of this work.
All right. Thank you. Dr. Jonathan Day, an associate professor at Purdue's School of Hospitality and Tourism Management, with us this morning. We'll have the link, of course, to this report in the podcast of the Opening Bell a little bit later this morning at WGNRadio.com.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN, Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a weak open later on Wall Street. Dow futures are down 75 points now. That's good for about a third. S&P down about a third as well. NASDAQ futures down just a little more than a third as we head to the opening bell. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we move into this holiday-shortened trading week, traders in lean hog futures will wonder if that upward move of the $3 daily limit on Friday will continue today. Growing concern over African swine fever and the potential impact on worldwide pork supplies a factor in that limit up move on Friday. Meanwhile, at the Chicago Board of Trade, kind of a quiet ending to last week with the soybeans moving higher, wheat ending fractionally higher, corn moving lower. Today, a report that exports of U.S. pork and other American agricultural goods to Canada and Mexico are expected to grow under the new U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. That according to the National Pork Producers Council that testified Friday at a hearing on the trade deal held by the International Trade Commission. And we also note that some farmers from Illinois were appointed to the National Biodiesel Board. Two farmers from Illinois, Jeff Lynn and Rob Schaefer, have been appointed to positions on the National Biodiesel Board. And then, of course, a reminder that the markets will be closed on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, and they will be closing a little earlier on Friday, the day after the holiday, and they'll be closing generally at noontime in most of the market activity at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. Just a couple stories before we leave you this morning. Chicago's Planning Commission has approved a $200 million development in North Lawndale. The project is hoped to transform the West Side neighborhood. The first phase expected to start in the spring on 10 acres of mostly vacant land. About 120,000 square feet of commercial and real estate space could be created. Hundreds of rental units would follow. Also, this morning, from the Brexit controversy, Britain's besieged Prime Minister Theresa May warning that a leadership change, removing her, would not make Brexit negotiations any easier as opponents in her Conservative Party threatened to unseat her, and the former Brexit secretary suggested she failed to stand up to bullying from the European Union. May added that the next 7 days are going to be critical for successful Brexit talks, and that she will be traveling to Brussels to meet with EU leaders as the European Council continues this discussion ahead of a coming deadline. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, November the 19th. On the earnings calendar today, L Brands, Urban Outfitters, and JD.com are earnings. Also today, we'll get a look at some of the housing numbers. The housing market index is due out. We'll get e-commerce retail sales report. Lots of Fed speakers out there as well. John Williams among them speaking today. Things that could move the markets on this Monday, November the 19th.